Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christensen. And today, I'm going to cover budesonide, which is a corticosteroid medication. And I'm going to focus a little bit more specifically on budesonide used in the GI tract. So budesonide has the indication for Crohn's disease, as well as ulcerative colitis. And if you remember a little bit about these two disease states, they are inflammatory type diseases within the GI tract. Now, ulcerative colitis, typically we're talking about the end of the GI tract, the colon, and that type of area. And Crohn's disease can happen more so anywhere throughout the GI tract, in the small intestine, large intestine, as well as the colon and rectal area as well. So that is one of the big primary differences, and certainly budesonide can be used for that as well. Now, there are other dosage forms with budesonide. Not going to focus on those much today. More so with the oral and rectal formulation there. Mechanism of action. This drug, again, is a corticosteroid, so it's going to reduce the action of prostaglandins, of kinins, which are very, very important modulators in kind of creating and promoting inflammation. And in Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, that inflammation is a problem and can cause pain and damage and all sorts of stuff to happen there. Now, when using steroids virtually for anything, particularly steroids that are going to have significant systemic absorption, which budesonide has some, we're going to want to limit the time frame, if at all possible, of use. And typically, for maintenance and remission, induction, depending upon what we're trying to do, in Crohn's or in ulcerative colitis, budesonide is probably going to be used for in the range of 1 to 3 months. Now, that may vary for certain situations or intolerances, maybe extended for certain, reasons or non-responses to other drug therapy. But kind of 1 to 3 months is kind of the usual target range for a course of budesonide. Again, depending upon what we're doing there. And, I talked about, we try to limit the use of corticosteroids, and, primarily that's, due to the long-term adverse effects from these medications. And I'll talk about those in a second, but first kind of starting on the short-term adverse effects of corticosteroids. In clinical practice, the two issues that I guess I see most common are probably GI upset with corticosteroids, as well as insomnia. These drugs can kind of amp people up a little bit. Now, budesonide may be a little bit better than, let's say, a prednisone, due to the fact that there isn't quite as much systemic absorption. And I'll also talk about that coming up. Now, the long-term consequences, some examples here. HPA suppression, diabetes risk, increasing those blood sugars. And that risk can happen in the short term. So if you've got a patient with diabetes and you put them on a steroid burst for a period of time, those steroids can jack up those blood sugars. So that's an important thing to monitor, to look out for, especially when, starting, increasing, and or discontinuing, those blood sugars can kind of fluctuate in those time frames. Osteoporosis risk, immunosuppressant risk with corticosteroids. I think of patients that maybe have, active infections going on or something that, it may exacerbate those infections. TB is a good example there, tuberculosis. Also risk to the eyes, cataracts, also maybe some minor increased risk for glaucoma as well. So very, very important to remember that. And, that HPA suppression, I kind of talked about a little bit or I mentioned, but that's really suppresses the body's own ability to produce cortisol-type hormones. And that can ultimately lead to adrenal cortical deficiency and adrenal crisis. So, and this risk is exacerbated by longer-term use and higher doses as well. So important to remember that whenever we're using steroids that are going to have some systemic absorption. So you may be, you know, thinking, okay, why budesonide, you know, in ulcerative colitis, Crohn's? And one of the primary reasons why we use budesonide, oral budesonide, versus, let's say, a prednisone, for example, is the fact that budesonide has a significantly high what's called a first pass metabolism. So that means that the drug is cleared or altered very, very quickly into a more inactive form. And if you were treating something systemic, like, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis, where we've got to get that drug into circulation and out into the rest of the body, that's a downside, potentially, where we're actually breaking up that drug before it gets out into significant systemic circulation. But in the case of Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, remember, this is an issue of inflammation in the GI tract. So having that medication right basically at the site of action when we ingest that medication is an advantage, and we can try to minimize maybe some of these systemic adverse effects or those long-term effects as well. So that's why you see budesonide a little bit more preferentially used in Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. Also, in kind of thinking about that site of action, I did want to mention that dosage forms with budesonide play an important role. So in the U.S., there is a rectal formulation available, which comes in a rectal foam. And I mentioned that in Crohn's disease, those Crohn's spots, inflammatory areas, can happen all throughout the intestinal tract or the GI tract. With the rectal foam, if we think about ulcerative colitis, this may be more advantageous there because we can really get that to the site of action. Again, it really depends upon how much of the GI tract and what areas are involved. So you're typically not going to see that rectal foam or any type of rectal formulation used in patients with Crohn's disease because those inflammatory spots can be all throughout the GI tract. But it would be potentially advantageous in, or more so, in a patient with ulcerative colitis. So important to think about those aspects as well. I believe there is an enema formulation, and I don't think it's available in the U.S. that I'm aware of. At least I haven't seen it, at least recently. So just important to think about that, the site of action, and which medications and or dosage forms we may need there. Now, if you enjoy the content of the Real Life Pharmacology podcast, definitely go support our sponsor, meded101.com/store, STORE. You can find our growing list of books and educational materials, board certification exam study materials like NAPLEX, BCPS, BCGP, BCACP, as well as BCMTMS. We have that newly released as well. We also have the opportunity to get your first book free with Audible. And so if you haven't, you can check out The Thrill of the Case or Pharmacotherapy. And again, that link is right at meded101.com/store. Go snag that Audible book for free if you've never listened to one. Solid 6 to 8 hours, I believe, of clinical medication-related content, case studies, drug interactions. Really good stuff for any healthcare professional that's looking to pick up a few pearls and learn a little bit more about medications. So with that, I'm going to get into drug interactions here. And it's very, very important with budesonide to remember CYP3A4 inhibitors. So these are drugs, this is a very, very common pathway. And if you have a CYP3A4 inhibitor on board, that can potentially increase budesonide concentrations. So some classic examples, clarithromycin, erythromycin, some of the azole antifungals like fluconazole, ketoconazole, verapamil is another medication that can inhibit CYP3A4. And one basically food or drink that you do need to remember is grapefruit juice. So grapefruit juice can inhibit CYP3A4's action, and that can lead to increased budesonide concentrations as well. I also think with drug interactions, I think of the immunosuppressive nature. And so if you've got, you know, a transplant patient or somebody on immunosuppressives for some reason, like a drug like tacrolimus, for example, that budesonide could potentially have some additive immunosuppressive effects and increase the risk of things like infection there. I do think of drug disease interactions when I have patients who are taking steroids. So first one I kind of alluded to in the adverse effects, so diabetes care and thinking about that budesonide, it has the potential to raise those blood sugars, so I definitely monitor for that. Also another thing I think about is osteoporosis risk, particularly if you know a patient's been on steroids quite a bit, you know, various courses throughout their life. Maybe they are on long-term steroids for some reason. That osteoporosis risk is going to go up for sure. And I also remember other medications that may contribute to that as well if I see a patient on a steroid. So drugs like phenytoin, the TZDs, so pioglitazone is the example there. If you've got a patient that happens to have, you know, hyperthyroid state or taking excessive thyroid supplement for a significant period of time, that may also increase that risk of osteoporosis. So those are a few drug interactions I think about when I think about budesonide. Also other agents that may contribute to GI risk, such as, you know, NSAIDs, or that may increase the risk of bleeding, anticoagulants, blood thinners, antiplatelet agents, things of that nature as well. With that, I think I'm going to wrap up the podcast for today. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, definitely leave us a rating, review. That's greatly appreciated. Helps us reach more people with our medication education. And certainly go support our sponsor, meded101.com/store. Greatly appreciative to those of you who have already done so there. You can reach us at reallifepharmacology.com. Also snag that free PDF. It's a 31-page PDF, I believe, where you can get really important clinical pearls on the top 200 drugs. Great little resource, you know, if you're going through nursing school, pharmacy school, med school, just to make sure you know some of the really clinically relevant things from basic pharmacology. So go check that out, subscribe, and get that for free at reallifepharmacology.com. You can find me at LinkedIn. You can also hit the contact button at reallifepharmacology.com if you want to shoot me an email. Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. Signing off for today. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.